So I'll just grab a few words with Dylan. Dylan, you had the taste of the gin there. We've moved out of earshot of the Mason's Gin people. So how did you find it?
It was very pleasant, actually. It's all the botanicals. You do get into this sort of like pompous talk about it. It was a nice gin. I really enjoyed it. Nice lemon. Beautiful tonic with it as well. So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
And your thoughts on the fabulous hall number one here, the rebuilt hall number one, because last year you were one of the last people, we were all collectively one of the last set of people who had the old exhibition hall here. This has been completely revamped, rebuilt in betwixt times. How do you think it's shaping up?
It looks very nice. There's a lot more space, or there appears to be a lot more space. So before, it seemed dark when you came in, and it was very cramped between the aisles. This offers you a lot more room to get around it. So it's quite nice. Yeah.
I think, speaking to Nigel, it was originally built as a temporary place back in the 1960s, and that temporary sort of nature became obviously nigh on 30 or 40 years, so they finally got it sorted out.
Yeah, it's like the prefab after the war, isn't it? One of those things that guarantee for about 5 years and it just lasts and lasts.
When Britain wasn't in Europe, and we're going back, so best not go Brexit on this time. We're currently actually just looking at one of the theatre demonstrations that we've actually got here, and we're going to just describe what we're seeing here, Dylan.
Yeah, the lady, broad Yorkshire accent, as you would expect at the Great Yorkshire Show. I think she's cooking a seafood dish and describing what she's doing at the same time. As a non-chef myself, who needs to even to cook beans on toast, complete silence and no hassle, I've got to admire her that she can actually entertain an audience as well as being able to knock up a complicated dish.
Yes, but could she actually sort out a higher education academic timetable, Dylan?
Well,
at the same time.
Yes, could I? That's the quest. As well as preparing a meal.
Yes.
It chills you out, doesn't it? And it's nice, actually, because we can actually see her as well. And then they've got a high-quality camera actually pointing out. I think she's doing a seafood dish. I think she's probably got squid in there and some kind of prawns as well. I might go up and have a chat with her and just see what she's actually cooking. We can't hear her too well, unfortunately.
No, I think the loudspeakers clearly have obviously sort of either not been switched on. They decided to actually just test her powers of projection there. But she is speaking, and we haven't lost the sense of hearing. So I think this is one of those minor points there. I'm not sure whether anybody even in the front row can actually hear what she's saying, but that's life.
It is quite amusing, isn't it? Because there she is cooking. She's opening and closing her mouth. The audience are gripped. They can't hear a word.
I got sorry about something there, but I don't think that's an apology for the rest of the bits and pieces. Okay, still to come on the Great Yorkshire Show Day 1, we're going to be hopefully checking out the wonderful world of Stuart and his sheep. We'll obviously be looking at some of the other sort of great events that are taking place here. Any particular things you're looking forward to yourself as a smallholder, Dylan?
Yeah, and not something that I make. We do make cider and various sort of drinks like that, but I did notice there were some local wine producers, not fruit wines, elderflower and that. There were some local grape wine producers, and that's a skill, certainly this far north, and I want to go and have a chat with them how they cope with that. I suspect they're using some of the North German vines, because they cope better with our summers. But anyway, we'll find out.
We will indeed. And a reminder, of course, you might be listening to this as part of a podcast on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. You may be listening to it on Siren 107.3 FM or Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station, as part of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. If you're listening to this on the Thursday, that'll be day 3 of the Great Yorkshire Show. You've still got time to actually whiz up and actually check out some of the fabulous sites that are actually taking place at the 2016 Great Yorkshire Show. And I gather weather, in fact, I'm using my predictive abilities now to actually give that weather forecast on Thursday. Yes, it'll be even more wonderful on Thursday. A deja vu sense has emerged as we've arrived at the Leventhorpe stand, Yorkshire's premier vineyard, of course, established in 1985. Ed thinks he actually might have met the legend who is...
George Bowden.
George, exactly.
Of Leventhorpe.
George of Leventhorpe. Well, I mean, George, we can certainly sort of thank your daughter for arranging this interview today. Quick name check, of course.
Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
She will suffer in the end, so...
I've brought a wonderful sort of team here. We've got Ed, we've got obviously Dylan here. Dylan, you're fascinated by this, I think, aren't you?
Yes, I was actually spent a quick run round the court here because I was particularly interested in finding local wine. It's quite difficult to find. But there are more vineyards than there used to be.
Now, the thing is, I'm not actually selling the wine here today. I'm promoting what's best from Yorkshire in conjunction with the NFU, the East Yorkshire Food Group, and the Yorkshire Showground. So I brought along this little 2012 Madeleine, which is one of my top wines. It's a medal winner, and it goes down very well indeed. So,
okay, first off, tell us about the grape then for a start. We'll start with the vine.
Now, the thing is, it's no good getting any old land and planting vines. Waste of time. You need the right land. And not only do you need the right land in the right climate, you also need the right grape to go with the land. The French haven't spent 1,000 years perfecting this. People think that they have a piece of land, get rid of the horse, let's plant vines, disaster. Because if you're going to sell wine, it's always going to be expensive. The wine's got to be of top quality. And I would say good English wine, in terms of value, in terms of taste, in terms of enjoyment, is more akin to New Zealand. It's on the top end of the price range on any shelf, but then it's on the top end of quality as well. You only get what you pay for. And I've been growing vines here for now for 30-odd years, and it takes many, many years to establish. And really, it's only after about 10 years that the roots are down 15-plus foot, that the vine can then, you can start to say, the vine and the grapes will show the quality of land.
You were mentioning French wine there. I was predicting that these would be kind of more kind of North German vines for the climate.
No, these are not German vines. It's the last thing I want is German tasting wines. These are French grapes from the Loire. And Madeleine Angevin is an early grape from the Loire. Too early for there. It used to be an insurance grape. When all else failed on the terrible weather, this would ripen. But would ripen far too early in a good to average year. But in England, 400 miles further north, it's spot on in the right site and gives wonderful floral, melon-like and droop fruit type flavours. And that's the kind of quality you're after. Yeah. And that's the model.
I prefer those sort of lighter French wines to some of the more heavy German ones, I will say. So anyway, it would be. I think we need to try it, don't we?
Ed already has availed himself. So Ed, your thoughts?
He's on his second glass, I think.
Second barrel, mate. Give us some advice. Clearly, this isn't the best thing to drink it out of. But on the way home, when you arrive home,
he's not drinking out of the bottle, just in case you're wondering.
You get your bottle. Is there anything you should or shouldn't use? I mean, French people quite often put their wine in a tumbler, don't they?
That's vin ordinaire. You wouldn't get any Frenchman of any note putting good wine in a tumbler. Don't forget, the English put expensive champagne into paper cups and they should be taken outside and disposed of.
Tragic, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely tragic. That is interesting, and I was going to say something even more interesting there, but I can't actually remember.
Obviously, the wine's affecting you already.
It's just the look of it. The old myth of temperature in wine. Because I quite like a red wine, so it nearly went everywhere there, that's been in the fridge.
You should say that. That particular wine you've got there, it shouldn't be served chilled. It should be served around about 10 to 12 degrees, so you get the full flavour. That's the Madeleine Angevin. My red is a light red, and it's very much akin to a northern Italian, and the cool conditions of the Alpine regions. And it's made out of a number of grapes. What's missing in one grape is made up by another grape. And at the end of pressing, after picking, at the end of winemaking and pressing, the skins from this year's grape goes into last year's wine. And it's what's known as a rapasso. And it gives the wine a very red currant, very red cherry flavour, and a very long life. This is already 5, going on 6 years old. You can lay this down for another 15-odd years. Even though it's a light wine, it's got longevity. Big umphy wines don't mean they're going to last.
Which one are you going for?
Well, I haven't had any yet, so I can't make a comment, but I was going to say, your daughter's here as well. Is it a family business?
It is, yes. So, but I'm the donkey and the tiller of the soil as well. So.
Is this true, sir? I mean, I would have thought you would also have been doing all the rest of the bits and pieces.
I'm unfortunately a civil servant.
Celebrate it with pride. It's all great stuff. Just think of the government changes you're going to face with.
She's not very civil when she has to help me sometimes.
But I suppose that there are times of year when it's going to be busier and you have to drag a lot more people in to help.
Well, put it this way, it's a busy time this year because of this. And unfortunately, because I'd arranged a trip to here and on obligations, one of my wines, the Saver, won the top gold medal in Britain. And because of such short notice, I couldn't cancel anything. So I've got to get that sorted out.
And you want to send in a video piece like they do on the Brits or various other award winners to say thank you?
I'll take your advice and do that.
I think, Sue, would you actually... I won't actually, because I'm driving and I do go zero from that point of view, but Sue, are you happy with this?
Oh, it's lovely. It smells... It's a lovely flowery... It's a flowery prime bouquet. Yes, yeah, very nice. Very nice indeed.
In the proper glass. You'd have that in a proper glass. It would fill the room when you pour the wine.
I think the sense, George, I'm getting is very much the passion that's coming through with this. Share with us the website for the Leventhorpe Vineyard. I presume you have an online base that people can order from.
Yeah, what I've just done, I've resisted websites for years. And I always say, when people write their own websites, they're never going to say anything negative. And one thing you cannot always do, especially a fancy website, is believe everything you read. I just kept it simple, stated, and... in the past, what I've had is a royal visit a few years back.
It's always good.
In recognition of reintroducing the vine back into Yorkshire. Because vines were, would you believe, were vineyards in Yorkshire right up to the First World War. Not loads, but there was a continuation from Roman times up to about 1914. They were swept away for the war effort. Grow your own food. And the nearest one I found around here was between Leeds and Wetherby. At East Richton, and that was grubbed up around about that time. But the farming family there, in their folklore, I doubt if they go back this far, but the folklore is there, that they grew the grapes, they didn't make the wine, they actually grew the grapes under contract for Kirtle Abbey back in the 1600s. And the grapes are picked, they would have trundled into Kirtle Abbey and then trundled back the day after. And when the dissolution of the monasteries came, they were passed on to secular families. And then,
George, it's a history of the human race via wine. I'm sure there's a series that's there. George, it's been an epic interview. Dylan, did it pass muster from your own taste buds?
It certainly did, yes. We had a dinner party the other day, and I wish we'd have had this wine at it.
And so we've actually sort of found the part of the Great Yorkshire Show that Bridget is particularly interested in, and we're about to speak to the legend who is...
Harry Constable.
Harry, you're particularly interested in this alfresco forge, but Bridget, it's your interview. Go for it.
Okay. So, how is it, like, just doing this, and what is it?
It's good. We go through quite a few different events and shows, like last month we were at Glastonbury, and we get to come to places like this. And
not less mud in Yorkshire, of course.
Yeah, there's... It's a bit easier to get to.
And no
well.
Deputy Labour leaderships, either.
No. Yeah, it is nice sort of coming out, especially sort of ones that we don't have to spend 5 hours in the
mud.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bridget.
What do you make?
We make all sorts of stuff, really. One of the techniques we use a lot of is a Japanese technique called Makume Gane, where you layer up different metals and fuse them together in a style sort of similar to Damascus steel, but with a more sort of decorative jewellery element.
Is it hard or easy or in the middle or?
It's not too difficult if you. It's about sort of being used to the tools and just like thinking about the way the metals move when you're working with them. So fortunately, because my dad's a blacksmith, I've had it ingrained in me from as long as I've been able to hold a hammer. Really.
How long did it take you to learn to do this?
It's just been very sort of slowly over the last 20 years, just picking up bits and bobs. And over the last sort of couple of years, I've been really sort of getting into it, properly learning off my dad.
How long have you been doing this? I did it right then.
No, it's all right.
I thought I did it wrong.
The excitement, really. It's just meeting sort of the legendary blacksmith himself. Fantastic.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, the shows I've been doing for a while. I remember, I think, the first Yorkshire show where I was left in charge of the stand for prolonged periods of time will have been...
Were you Bridget's age, then?
Yeah. It'll be about 6-7 years ago now. It's been... A while.
So you're actually here in the year of 2012, when, of course, it goes down as the legendary one that was cancelled due to the weather.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Listen, Bridget, do you fancy being a blacksmith?
Maybe. I don't know.
Is there a role for female blacksmiths these days?
Oh, there's plenty. In fact, the Worshipful Company of Blacksmiths stands being organised by female blacksmiths, and they've got trying to get a few more in because it's largely sort of grubby middle-aged men, which.
What are you trying to say that?
I mean, physically.
Well, exactly. So what are you trying to say? Great stuff. I mean, listen, it's fantastic. Yeah, again, a reminder in terms of the things that you're at the Great Yorkshire. Bridget, one last question?
What is it like working with your dad?
It's all right. It can be infuriating sometimes. Sometimes it's a bit of a pain, sort of, if we've had a bit of an argument about something at work, not really being able to escape that around tea and stuff. But, you know, it's... I'd rather work for him than someone else, really.
Quite right, too. Parents are very difficult to bring into the world. Bridget, many thanks for that. What did you think of Bridget as an interviewer?
Very good.
Good, isn't it? I think she gets it from her parents. And we're delighted to be able to speak now from the RNLI with...
Callum Moffat.
Callum, good to connect with your good self. You've clearly taken over a whole chunk of the Great Yorkshire Showground here. I mean, literally, almost as far as the eye can see, RNLI. Global warming surely isn't that bad.
So we've got a great presence here at the show, and we're very excited to be here. Beautiful weather, and hopefully this continues, but we've got... colleagues from our departments in the flood rescue team, our lifeguard teams, our community safety teams and our face-to-face fundraising teams all here today to give our key safety messages about staying safe around the coast and inland as well, and also try to generate some support from the show.
Now, we normally do a feature on the RNLI when we're down at the London Boat Show in January, which obviously sort of connects from that perspective. Ed, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, what are some of the ways that... people can get involved as a volunteer, because I guess like a lot of organisations you really need volunteers to come forwards.
Yeah, so 95% of our whole organisation is volunteers, and it's the foundation of what we do. We couldn't do what we do without our volunteers. We're always looking for new members to join our crews around the coastline, new members to join our fundraising branches, and there's a variety of ways in which people can support us and volunteer their time to help protect our coastline and save lives at sea.
How did you end up getting involved with RNLI? Because I take it you're staff, are you?
Yes, so I'm part of the face-to-face fundraising team this summer, working on the beaches to raise awareness and generate some fundraising support through regular support. And I started my journey. I've been a solid water user all my life, a lot of surfing, kayaking, and really had an affinity with the charity from a young age. Loved the organisation and its values. From then, for my summer after university, I started doing some fundraising, and from then progressed through to the face-to-face fundraising team.
So today I'd say it's summer. There's no wind about, it's dry. Where I used to live, I used to walk down Southend Pier quite a lot, and there's a lifeboat moored right at the end of it, and my God, that thing used to move around, even in the stillest weather. So I would imagine it's quite a frightening thing, if you like, to be involved with as well.
Yeah, our seas are dangerously unpredictable. It may look calm, it may look still, but there's a lot of factors that are in place. Rip currents are often tricky to spot, and as well, being around the coastline, 60% of the people who actually enter the water don't intend on going in the water. So it's always crucial to be safe, no matter how calm it looks. Cold water shocks are another huge factor that... the water around our coastline is very cold and can send you into shock.
Well, I know that Bridget has, whilst we've been speaking, availed herself of a photo opportunity with the RNLI lifeguards rescue boat there. Is that a power boat that we're actually looking at in present?
So yeah, that's one of our rescue watercraft boats. It's a jet ski, which is used on our lifeguarded beaches where it's required. And it's a great bit of kit to really better our life-saving service. It has a trolley on the back that people can grab hold of when they're in trouble.
And, of course, a reminder, if people are looking to consider following your path, Callum, and actually volunteering for the RNLI, presumably the best bet is to go on the website.
Yes, yeah, so rnli.org.uk online. There's all sorts of information on there about how to become a supporter, how to volunteer your time, how to get involved, and also some critical sea safety and coastal safety advice.
We'll just bring Dylan in briefly for this one. Dylan, any thoughts on Bridget becoming an RNLI lifeguard?
She seemed very keen. She did seem very keen on the jet ski, but we were trying to explain to her that when you actually get that on the sea, it's going to be very small. So she grew up.
Teeny tiny. But those of us who remember The Spy Who Loved Me, of course, then the jet ski becomes a critical part of 007's armory.
Yeah, well, we could all do with one of those.
Let's just bring in Bridget and find her own view. Bridget, you've sat on the jet ski there. Callum here was paying keen attention as a possible sort of recruitment officer here. What did you make of it? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed on the jet ski. I felt like I was going to actually go on. I felt like I was actually going to move. And I was like, wah!
So clearly, thumbs up there, I think.
Yeah, brilliant. This is what it's all about, getting the youth engaged with our messages and helping them stay safe at the coastline.
It's extraordinary, the kind of wonderful aspects you find at the Great Yorkshire Show. And we're now delighted to speak to
Fairy Enchantica.
Of course, Fairy Enchantica. I feel as though my Lambda days are coming back to actually haunt me here. But that's more Shakespeare. Fairy Enchantica, you've got a wonderful sunflower there. Is this bringing out the sun as we speak?
Well, actually, it is. And it's going to be creating more magic on the Radio York stage in a little while. I'm here with some of my friends from Make-A-Wish Entertainment. And we are all having amazing time in the Discovery Zone, which is a fabulous place for children to go and explore and learn loads about the countryside and make crafts and just have a really fun day.
So we've got our junior reporter here, Bridget. Bridget, your questions for Fairy Enchantica.
What is it like to be in Alice in Wonderland?
Well, to be in Alice in Wonderland, you might want to ask my friend Mr. Hatter over there, but right now he's sat on... What was that, Bridget?
Mr.
What's
Hatter's
he sat
gone
on?
Mad.
He's gone mad. What's he sat on?
He called it a ski boat.
It's not a ski boat. Is it a ski boat?
No.
He's here with the RNLI and he's having a photograph on a rescue boat of some sort. Fascinating! But to be in Wonderland, it is a very magical place where anything can happen. And that's kind of how I feel being at the Great Yorkshire Show is also.
You wander around, suddenly you get pounced upon by radio stations to do interviews in Lincoln for Siren FM, for Southside Broadcasting, Fairy Enchantica. Clearly the magic is there.
It is, and the day has only just begun.
Sue.
Where can people find you, and how many shows are you doing? Are you over just for the 3 days, or tell me about it.
We are here every day, and we're lucky to be here every year at the Great Yorkshire Show. You can find the fairies and lots of other educational things that we're doing in the Discovery Zone all day from 8 till 6, and if you want to find me on the stage, I'm going to be on the stage today at 12:30, but I believe there might be someone from the dark side there at 11:30.
No.
Yes, it's a bit of a tribute to Star Wars, but anyway, I don't want to ruin any surprises.
Makeawishentertainment.co.uk, another go-to website for the event.
That's right, and also if you keep an eye on our Facebook page, we'll be doing live tweets and things of what's happening on the stages and all the entertainment that's going on today.
Well, keep shaking that wand, or should I say, magical sunflower, Fairy Enchantica.
I absolutely will, and have a fabulous, fairy-full, fun day!